Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has extended his rule into a third decade yesterday, beating his rival Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu in an acrimonious runoff election. Now, the election had been seen as one of the most consequential yet for Turkey and has been watched closely across the world. With the very latest, I'm joined on the line from Ankara by Orla Geer, an international correspondent with BBC News. Orla, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Morning, Claire. Good to be with you.
So this highly anticipated runoff after the initial election, it showed a gap of more than 2 million votes. Is that right, between Erdogan and his challenger?
The gap is about 2.5 million votes, and the percentages that they came out with, the president got 52% of the votes cast. His rival, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, who is the secular opposition leader here, he got 47.8. So it's a gap of about 4%, which will ring a bell for people, I think. It's a bit like the 4% Brexit gap in the UK. On one level, the two sides were quite close together, but in another sense, they're implacably opposed. So this was obviously a big victory for the president and his supporters. They were thronging the streets here in Ankara last night. We could hear cheering in every direction. There were processions of cars blaring their horns, waving Turkish flags out the window. And of course, then we had the president himself appearing for a victory speech on the balcony at his custom-built presidential palace here, which has a mere 1,000 rooms. Incidentally, the opposition leader had pledged to put that back into public use if he won. Now, it was a typical kind of Erdogan speech, vintage Erdogan in a way. On the one hand, he was saying that all of Turkey had won in this election. He was talking about the need to move on, the need for unity. But in the same breath, he then attacked the opposition once again, accused them of working with terrorists without providing any proof. And what he means there is banned Kurdish militants. And he also once again attacked the LGBTQ community, who he has regularly targeted during the campaign. So it was the typical polarizing, divisive rhetoric that we have come to associate with Recep Tayyip Erdogan. But let's not forget, that was the rhetoric that was chosen by the majority of the voters here. We should point out that he has almost total control of the media. He controls about 90% of the Turkish media. So, of course, during this campaign, he had wall-to-wall, favourable, unquestioning coverage for hour after hour, day after day, on a multitude of TV channels here. I mean, you could flick from one channel to another and you would still see his face, and you would definitely not see the opposition.
Yeah, but he was seen as vulnerable, wasn't he, going into this election? And we had a challenger in Kılıçdaroğlu who was saying spring will come. Then after the initial election, he completely changed his tune, didn't he? And he railed against immigrants who had come to Turkey. He became very harsh in his nationalism, always on the back foot when you change your message going into the second phase of this election.
Yeah, it was a very naked pivot to the right, Claire, after his first round showing. You might remember that before the first round of the election, all of the opinion polls here were suggesting that Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu would be in the lead in that first round. It was expected to go to a second round, but he was expected to be the one in the lead. Of course, what we saw on the day was exactly the opposite. President Erdogan came out first. Now, after that, there was a degree of absolute shell shock in the opposition camp. And in fact, we spoke to one of their strategists the day after the first round disappointment, and he basically had his head in his hands. Now, they went off and cobbled together a strategy which involved chasing the votes of nationalists and the far right here. And the strategy was to come out on the offensive against refugees. We had very hard line billboard advertisements from Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. We had very hardline speeches in which he said very firmly, "I will send all refugees home, period." Now, that includes 3.4 million Syrians who fled here to escape war in their own country. So he was definitely trying to court the nationalists and the ultra-nationalists. It did increase his showing this time around. He got a few more percent, but it wasn't enough to tilt the balance. Now, he has come out and said this was the most unfair election in Turkish history. That may be the case, certainly if you have an opposition that is denied airtime on state TV, it's very hard for them to actually get their message across. And political scientists here would tell you that Turkey is a place where there is a viewing public which gets their information from TV rather than a reading public getting their information from newspapers. So, you know, you can find the opposition message here if you go look for it. It's all over social media, but you certainly don't see it on state TV. And that's just one of the advantages that the president had. He had many more.
And Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, you mentioned there that he said it was the most unfair election process of recent years. He also said, though, my biggest sadness is the trouble waiting for this country. What did he mean? And is he right? Is there trouble waiting for Turkey?
I think undoubtedly there is, and even the president's supporters would have to accept this. I mean, we're dealing, Claire, now with an economy in ruins. That's simply the fact. The Turkish lira has collapsed. We have official inflation of more than 40%. Undoubtedly, it's at least twice that in real terms. Last October, it spiraled to 85%. That was the official figure. So imagine what the real figure was. So when you go to the supermarket here, you literally see the prices rising in front of your eyes, or you find no price stickers because it's changing so fast that, you know, the shopkeepers don't bother to update. You just ask at the cash register, what does this cost today? Now, many places are dealing with inflation, of course, including Ireland, but the level of inflation here is particularly punishing and is blamed by experts solely on the president's own economic policies. He has a belief that if you keep interest rates down, you will curb inflation, whereas economic experts would tell you it's the opposite. Now, he has clung to that strategy in recent years as things have got worse across Turkey. He has gone through central bank governor after central bank governor, finance minister after finance minister, and he has refused to alter that strategy. Turkey now is in a very perilous position with its foreign reserves. The value of the lira has collapsed. So all of this is going to come to a head. And the opposition had been hoping, if it won, that there would be a big push, there would be foreign direct investment, overseas companies would want to get back into the market here. That certainly now, I think, will not happen. Overseas investors will be very, very cautious, and the economic troubles can only worsen.
I read an analysis piece this morning that suggested that Erdogan might try and distract from the economic problems by sparking some sort of conflict on their borders, or perhaps threatening to flood the EU with migrants. Do you expect that that might be a tactic he would use?
I mean, all of these things are possible. That's something I've learned here, Claire, living here in the last 4 years and covering President Erdogan. He's very combative. He seems to almost enjoy, from time to time, upsetting the international order. He has made that threat before about refugees, that he would flood the European Union with them. And in fact, at that time, there was misleading information given on state media here to suggest that the borders to Greece were open. And thousands of refugees, if not tens of thousands, converged on the border, where we saw them sleeping rough in freezing conditions, men, women, babies, elderly people, because they had been led to believe they would be able to enter Greece, which of course they were not able to do. So President Erdogan doesn't hesitate to play that card and to use the refugees who are living here as pawns. Of course, he also maintains a close relationship with Vladimir Putin, who, no surprises, was one of the first people to congratulate him last night. That's also tricky for the international community. It's particularly tricky for NATO. Turkey is the only Muslim NATO member, but it has bought a missile system from Russia. So he is certainly a leader who follows his own path, who is not afraid of confrontation, in fact, who almost seems to relish it. And certainly those things do go down well here. It is a popular thing here to be seen as a strong Turkish nationalist who stands up to the outside world. And one of the voters we spoke to last night, one of the Erdogan supporters, said he has taught a lesson to the whole world. So this is something that plays very well with the Turkish public, as does any kind of military incursion across the border in Syria, which the president has invaded several times in the name of fighting Kurdish militants.
Although given how close this election was, both phases of it, there's likely to be internal division before you start looking at what might happen beyond Turkey.
I think there is, and I think what the election has shown once again, if there was any doubt, is that this is a deeply polarised country. The gap between the two sides was about 4%. So 25 million Turks went to the polls yesterday and said, we want change. 27 million went to the polls and said, we want things to continue as they are. So the gap is certainly there. This is a very divided place, and you feel that every single day. But the opposition is saying to its supporters, stick with us. We are going to continue the battle to bring what they call real democracy here. But I think the reality is many of those who hoped for change this time have had the stuffing knocked out of them. This was certainly seen as the best hope ever for the opposition. Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu had managed to kind of craft this pretty unlikely coalition of six opposition parties. He kept them together through the campaign. And they won, or they ran, a campaign that managed to reach many, many people here, despite all the obstacles that they faced. So on one level, you can say the opposition failed. On another level, you can say they had massive obstacles against them. And in that context, they did pretty well.
Orla, thank you very much for joining us from Ankara. Orla Gearin, their international correspondent with BBC News.
Text 51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.